John Turk is an author, scientist, explorer, adventurer, and much more. His most recent book is Crocodiles and Ice, which covers, among other things, his circumnavigation of Ellesmere Island and his spiritual journey from suburban Connecticut to the deep wild. And John is the featured speaker at North House Winter's Gathering this weekend, and he joins us now in the studio. Welcome, John.
Thank you, CJ. It's great to be here.
All right. I'm going to give a little background on you so people know who we're talking to. First, you're returning for the third time to North House. Has it always been during Winter's Gathering?
Yeah, always in November.
Okay, awesome. And he's got a presentation tomorrow called Communicating with Animals at 7:30 at the North House. And you also have a half-day class during the day tomorrow, is that right?
Yeah, it's Finding a Sense of Place. It's a basic mindfulness class.
Okay. So here's some information about John. He grew up on the shores of a wooded lake in Connecticut. Went to Phillips Academy, Andover, Brown University, earned a PhD in organic chemistry. And in 1971, the same year as Earth Day number one, he co-authored the first environmental science textbook in the United States, and it sold over 100,000 copies and spearheaded the development of environmental science curricula in North America. Same time, he kind of a restless soul, and so he began wandering the globe, and over the decades he's kayaked across the North Pacific and around Cape Horn, mountain biked across the Gobi Desert, made the first climbing ascents of big walls on Baffin Island, and first skied descents in the Tian Shan Mountains, is that right?
Yep.
And you're going to have to tell me how to pronounce that country.
Kyrgyzstan.
Kyrgyzstan, okay. So he talks to people in bookstores and small venues, but also places like Lincoln Center, the film festival in Telluride, and you've done a TED talk as well. Is that right?
Yeah, TEDx talk.
All right. And we have him sitting right here in the studio with us, which
right
is
here. Here
pretty
we are.
Fabulous. So just to get us started, you're a scientist, you're an explorer, you're a writer, so tell us about how some of those areas come together for you.
Well, they don't have to come together.
All right.
See, I've never had a five-year plan.
Oh.
So I do what interests me at the moment. And, you know, in retrospect, I can make up some mumbo-jumbo about how they all dovetail together. But in reality, I feel my life has been bumbling along. My parents expected me to be a scientist, and I was a dutiful son, so I became a scientist. And then I realized, you know, I really don't want to do this. So I quit, and then I stumbled into becoming a writer. And I've been a writer for 47 years. That's basically what I've done.
All right. And so I think a lot of what your work focuses on is that you believe humans today have become too disconnected from nature. And in fact, that's what your classes are about, is sort of reconnecting. So can you, what kind of things can we do to bring ourselves back into a better connection with the wild world?
Yeah, I mean, it's an old theme, you know, this is nothing new with John Turk. What it all comes down to, you really have to back up and say that we were animals. We started off as animals. If you look at something like Homo erectus, our ancestors, they did pretty darn well, but not great. They were able to migrate quite a bit, and they populated a big chunk of the globe, not the Western Hemisphere, but the rest. But they never really dominated any of the ecosystems they were with. And so people came along, and somehow, some mysterious thing, they started thinking different than Homo erectus. And they started doing things like make art. And as soon as they started making art, they made representational art. So the lion-headed man 40,000 years ago in Germany, a very famous Paleolithic sculpture, was a man with a lion head. So this is a mythology. This is a story. And the stories have become very powerful. We killed off Neanderthals. We killed off Homo erectus. we're through this mythology, we gained a lot. And science comes out of mythology, thinking about things that don't exist. Chimpanzees think about things that exist. People think about things that don't exist, like a lion-headed man. Aha! Dum-dum-dum. So all that sounds really good, but then our mythologies cause all this trouble, you know? They give us the great three major mythologies of Western civilization, religion, government, and money, you know, all of which don't really exist, but cause a lot of commotion in the world today. So, you know, I fly around on airplanes. If I get sick, I go to the doctor. I like science and stuff like that. And I have a credit card like everybody else. But at the same time, it messes with our heads when we live in mythologies. And everybody lives in mythologies in non-reality. And all I'm saying is really simple, is if you go into nature, nature is nature. It's there. There's no pretensions. There's no mythologies. It snows, gets hot, a storm comes, it gets sunny, grizzly bear encounters you. Things happen, but there's no, it's clean in your mind. Mm. And all of these mythologies are creating a lot of commotion today. You know, oh man, look out there, you know. And in order, and one way, there's other ways to do it. One way to clean out the garbage, clean out the cobwebs, and just live a simple, uncomplicated life is to go to nature.
Mm. And you've done a lot of that. You've done a lot of traveling. You've spent a lot of time with nature and encountering animals. And I'm wondering if you could tell us just a little bit about some of your experiences when you were doing the circumnavigation of Ellesmere Island. You had a close encounter with a walrus and several, it sounds like, with polar bear.
Right, and a close encounter with a wolf, which is very important.
Okay.
But, okay, let's take the polar bear because, you know, they're the poster child of cool and groovy animals. So we had many. We had 9 close encounters with polar bears in one day. The total number I've lost track of, okay? So the closest encounter, you're sleeping in the middle of the night. You've been living in a tent for almost 3 months. You know, the in your subconscious, you know the feeling of the tent swaying in the wind, and you live through that like a sailor on a boat. And then all of a sudden, there's a jerk. The tent moves in a jerk, which is very different than the wind. Boomer, my partner, and I are both up. Boomer is a better athlete than I am. He's nanoseconds quicker at every move. He's got the gun. It was between us. By the time I reach for the gun, his hand is already on it. There's a polar bear in the tent. It ripped a hole in the tent, and the polar bear's face is closer than you are to me right now, CJ. It's 18 inches away. And there it is. Boom. Big polar bear. Okay. All right. So what's going on here? And how do you react to this situation? And what's the polar bear thinking? Well, I don't know what the polar bear is thinking, but I know a lot about polar bear hierarchy within the polar bear communities. And there are polar bears at different points in the hierarchy. So if a polar bear, grizz, black bear, whatever, is high in the hierarchy of bears, and you threaten it, then it's trained to fight. It likes to fight. So if you meet a black bear out here in the forest here in Minnesota, and it's a high hierarchy bear, you're best to act submissive. But if it's a low hierarchy bear, you're best to act dominant, because you fit within the kind of culture. This is communication with animals. You know, somebody handed me this book about this dog that could telepathically talk in complex, mythology-laden philosophical concepts with people, and like that's missing the point. That doesn't do that. You know, the dog can tell you, I'm bummed out because you're not taking me for a walk today, but I love you anyway. I mean, dogs say that. But, you know, when I say communication with animals, I'm not in some woo-woo land where I'm off there, you know, having a discussion about Kant with a polar bear. You're working within the polar bear or the bear's natural umwelt, their natural way that they survive.
Right.
So you have an encounter with a bear, and you have to decide where in the hierarchy the bear is, and then how you should react. So now you ask, you know, how do you know that? And my answer is, you better learn quick if you're in polar bear country. You wake up in the middle of the night, and there's a bear 18 inches away in your face. You don't have much time. You haven't seen the bear approach. You haven't seen the body language of the bear. Normally, when a bear approaches you, you get to watch it. You get to watch its face and its eyes and its ears and, you know, a moose. So you watch the moose's ears. You're going to know a lot about what that moose is going to do. I had been... sometime previously, I'd had a grizzly bear. I'm making this a long answer to a simple question, but it is a long answer, you see. I had a grizzly bear come into my tent once, same thing, swipe the tent. So I had practice for this. I'd been thinking about it for a number of years. If a polar bear can swat through really thick ice and kill a seal all in one swat, they're really strong. A nylon tent is not going to stop a fast swipe with a polar bear. So if the polar bear just kind of pokes a little three-corner hole in your tent, it's not on the attack.
It's curious.
It's curious. So you have to tell them that this is fine. You can be curious, but please leave. Now, we tried this experiment. You think I'm making this up. I'm not making this up. We tried yelling to other bears, we love you, bear, please go away. And that never worked too well. And we tried swearing, you know, lots of hard consonants, you know, C's and K's with not many vowels in between, and hit it hard with hard consonant language. And bears seem to react more afraid of you when you swear at the bear. So, you know, you swear at the bear and you tell it to, you know, go away, like, you know, you would say in a way that your mother would be upset with you for talking like that. Now, at the same time, you have the 12-gauge shotgun in your hand.
Just
you
know? In case.
Just in case. It yeah. doesn't work. But it's a curious bear. We're in a very remote place. The bear has not seen people. It's not a Yosemite bear that sees people every day for 50 generations. It wants to know what's in this tent, and what's in this tent is an unpleasant, consonant-screaming, bad-smelling animal. And it decides, and it also, you know, I believe that an animal, from your breath and the position of your eyes, knows whether you're a predator or prey. Mm-hmm. It says, this is a dangerous thing. This thing isn't afraid of me, and I should back off. Mm-hmm. So that's a really simple communication. Go away, bear.
Yep.
Yeah, go ahead, CJ.
Well, I just wanted to remind people we're talking with John Turk, and he is going to give a presentation at North House tomorrow night at 7:30, all about communicating with animals. And we're talking with him about an adventure he had a few years ago circumnavigating Ellesmere Island. So the communication... Okay, so post that experience, I'm imagining you and Boomer had a little adrenaline rush going, and you processed that. Do you feel like, yes, he understood that you were a mean man, yelling at him, bad-smelling man, whatever, but did you feel like there was a connection on any other kind of level? Like, did you... And do you feel like animals are sentient, so they understand and reason in their own way?
Yeah, good question. This is the question. You got to try to not make things up and put yourself in the hero seat. With that bear, I would say no. It was a simple case of fight and flight kind of thing. But with many other animals in the wild, I do feel I've had a communication on a much deeper level. So now let's stay on Ellesmere. We had a wolf come to visit. We were traveling from the high 70s north latitude to high Arctic into 80 degrees, the polar zone. 80 degree north latitude is a line on a white man's map, but it's still a line that you're going into the polar zone. When we got there to this imaginary line on a white man's map, there was a wolf right there. I mean, like I had my GPS out. The wolf was, for all intents and purposes, straddling 80 degrees, .000. Okay. It's a wolf. We take a picture of it. It looks like a wolf. There are wolves in Minnesota forest. Most of the time when we see a wolf, that wolf scurries away shortly after our visual encounter. It doesn't hang around. This wolf stayed within a few meters of us all afternoon, slept a couple feet, a meter from the tent, and was sitting in front of the vestibule in the tent that morning, the next morning, when we opened the vestibule to open some ventilation to start our stove. The wolf is right there. It's been there for 15 hours. Okay. All right. So there is some real communication between us and the wolf. There's absolutely no question. That wolf was there because it wanted to communicate with us. But this isn't a telepathic wolf, you know, who's talking to me in some kind of telepathic wolf English. So what is the wolf saying? See, now you have to trust me, you know, because I can be making this up. I can say anything I want. Was this the fairy godmother wolf promising us a safe passage into the high polar zone? No. There's no fairy godmother wolves. So to me, this wolf was nature coming to speak to me, okay? And nature, what does nature tell you over and over and over again? Welcome to the polar zone. You're going to get cold. You're going to get hungry. You're going to get tired. You're going to get strung out. You might die out here.
Welcome to my world.
Exactly. Exactly. With a smile and a laugh. Yeah. Good to see you guys. And I use the word vulnerability. I was in a class today, teaching a class. Somebody else used the word terror. We in Western society don't like vulnerability, and we certainly don't like terror. But true, sublime emission into the unknown involves both vulnerability and terror. And if we accept vulnerability and terror, we get a door to the sublime. That's a good deal in my part. I'll take vulnerability, I'll take terror if I can see the sublime. And, you know, all this is just new in my head because using the word terror and sublime just came to me this afternoon. Years ago when I was in Siberia with the old grandmother Mulinat, I ate the Amanita mushroom, the hallucinogenic mushroom, and she took me to the other world, to the sublime. And I couldn't get there because the terror stood in the way. And that moment when she, this 96-year-old woman, born during the reign of Tsar Nicholas II, was taking me into the sublime, and all I could see was terror. You see, wow. You know, and I'll accept terror and vulnerability if it'll take me close to the sublime. In our world, we're trying to defeat it. We don't like vulnerability. We don't like that. If we get vulnerable, we buy a bulldozer. You know, if we're more vulnerable, we buy a bigger bulldozer. So to me, that conversation with the wolf has summed up our whole relationship with nature. And that's...
Isn't it interesting that we talk about nature like we're separate from it?
Yeah.
I mean, we have separated ourselves, but, you know, we are just another animal out there.
We live in the Anthropocene, the age when 200 million years from now, some intelligent species cores down through sedimentary layers. They'll find this thin layer of plastic, you see, and they'll say that's the layer that was dominated by the rule of Homo sapiens.
Yeah. Yes.
Who distance themselves from nature.
Exactly.
John, and then nature will take over and run the show again.
I hope so. John Turk is in the studio with us. Oh, it's been wonderful talking with you, and I could go on for hours and hours. Unfortunately, we are running out of time, but I want to make sure that people know that your half-day class tomorrow at North House starts at
9 o'clock,
goes till 1.
Yeah.
And then at 7:30 tomorrow night, you're the featured speaker, and the topic is communicating with animals. And I have a feeling you have many, many stories to tell. I just have one more question.
Yeah.
Have you reached the sublime?
You know, it's just like when I was with Moulinot, you're in the dark labyrinth, you know, and you know it exists out there, but you never get there.
All right. Well, I want to just read some of your words, if I may, before we close out.
Thank you.
Because you are an excellent writer. And you talk about expeditions, and I feel like that is just a metaphor for life. Expeditions, you say, are about real and metaphorical passages over the ice, ducks skimming over the water, walrus attacks, embracing our own powerlessness, the cold, the sore toes, the swollen feet, passing into the zone beyond willpower, striving individually to survive, while at the same time revering the bear spirit and the ice spirit that might easily kill you in an instant. There is no turning back, no other way.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, John Turk, for joining us.